In Basil's Theological Understanding, this wasn't terribly uncommon. In fact, we showed up in the globalization piece I did a couple years ago with you. God provided sufficient resources on earth to meet everyone's needs, but distributed them unequally so that wealth could be shared with the poor, resulting in blessing for both. So there's enough resources overall. Obviously, we can combine them through things. So here's a quote from that. It befits those who possess sound judgment to recognize that they have received wealth as stewardship and not for their own enjoyment. So in another homily that's quite famous for Basil, it's called I Will Tear Down My Barns. I'll just summarize this one. He's like, hey, y'all are robbers for not giving to the poor. Y'all are murderers for, not feeding the hungry. And so, so it's a very strong terminology associated with this. So Basil saw the problem of inequality between the richest and poor as a problem to be resolved. And so we could talk about what might be his policy implications. And so I would argue that he would talk about universal basic needs programs, investment in accessible education, job training. You're like, where did that come from? Well, this is actually pretty obvious if you know a little bit more. Basil founded the Basiliad. He didn't name it Basiliad, but right outside of Caesarea, first of its kind, really. It was a city of charity where it gathered the poor people in need and strangers. Who were given food and shelter. There were special buildings for every disease with staff to care for the sick, and orphans were provided their living and were educated with vocational schools established for this purpose. It actually became the bigger city there. It's actually survived beyond Caesarea itself. So given that excess has some evils to it, he might advocate a progressive inheritance tax. We certainly can say, hey, you've got enough clothes, is what this one is. And hey, and stop using excuses, including excuses about your children. So coming back to the inheritance text, being found worthy to become parents, did you at once add the following, give me children that I might disobey your commandments? Also, who will vouch for the prudence of your children, that they will use what is left to them for good ends? For many, wealth becomes an aid to immorality. So, same scripture, different implications that might come out of it because of the way we look at it. You're probably not surprised at that. You know, we are talking about one scripture. We're not looking at a wider thing. And that, different assumptions about what is being said by Jesus can lead to different conclusions. And that's okay. One is about, laying the groundwork for growth and maybe giving nudges and learning. The other one is making sure that, hey, this evil is transformed into something good. All right. Let's see. I'm trying to keep things short and sweet for you. One of the questions you're probably going to ask me, and we can do this in a longer discussion afterwards at the pub if you'd like. But is the scripture relevant for policymaking? I wrestle with this with everything I do because this is what I do. We can say all scripture is useful. That's a nice way to sort of do this in the various realms. And, it is active and alive and sharper than any double-edged sword. But one of the things to talk about is, there is the spiritual dimension that's going on in here. And often their arguments are in spiritual terms that won't have the same resonance with the wider audience. And so, certainly Clement is talking about the individual soul. So that sort of takes away some of this. But even Basil is, part of his argument is in terms of laying your treasure up in heaven, right? So, you can't really make those kind of arguments on the street to say, yeah, here's why you should do this. You're going to get more stuff in heaven if you're talking to the person who doesn't believe. But still, you can look at this in a couple ways. One way could be, what might we be saying to ourselves as Christian, thinking about as Christian? But I would argue still, even this sort of analysis has broader application. And so broader application in the sense of you could really secularize some of these arguments if you wanted to. If one generally contends that what is important is one's attitude toward wealth, then Clement's policy implications remain relevant. And if one generally contends that wealth imbalances negatively impact the rich themselves or society at large, then Basil's policy implications remain relevant. So there is a reason to say, hey, you know, this is useful for thinking about things more generally. What is the actual time?
Quarter to ten.
Okay. Because I really do want to see your question. So let me do this. You know, one of the things, though, for Christians, though, we would think about the role of motivation in this story. And so that part will matter to us. And I would argue that the real question maybe becomes is to what degree is it going to matter? We live often in a second best world, right? We aren't going to create the kingdom of heaven on earth, but we can try how best to do that. And so we can have those sorts of conversations too. And so, you know, one question that comes up here is the question that sees Basil and Clement as different. You know, is this about the individual or is this about also the community that's going to determine whether we do this institutional framework, right? You know, we could talk about it's going to matter to people. Is this state-led or church-directed that's going to be important to this story? Feedback mechanisms. You know, we're economists. We're talking to behavioral economists. And so, you know, to what degree does a policy turnaround affect how people think and act and do themselves? And then what is it doing to agency, right? So all of those questions are things that make this more complicated. But it's still one of those things I would argue that it makes it more complex, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't have the conversation itself. And so I'd like to do, I think I'm doing what Clement and Basil are doing, is they start with where we should start as Christians, and that is with the scripture. And then they're asking the question, how should we live? So I think I'm doing something a little different here. Before on some of my work, it is, to summarize, you know, it is trying to say, is there some consistency across scriptures on things like work, rest, debt, stewardship, poverty, integrity? I don't think that's that easy to do on economic inequality. And so what we're doing instead here is a comparative analysis of scripture or comparative analysis of patristic writers on scripture. And it should broaden our theological understanding. My co-author brought up the point that it has this shared intellectual background that the patristics do for Roman Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestants. And it does what I think it ought to be doing, you know, explicitly considering scriptures. And it's in the broader world, in the secular world, it's giving us a way of thinking about a wider range of analysis and policy options. And so, thank you. And I'd love to hear all your questions.
That's sweet. We have a couple, by the way. One is from anyone mind you put your green hand up? I know there's some people who haven't spoken as well. So let's start away. We've got about 10 minutes, so let's be quite quick and short chart.
Just a couple of texts that talk about equality or inequality with the church. So you've got Acts 2 and Acts 4 image, but also 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, where Paul explicitly talks about equality between congregations. That leads us to the question. Did the patristic writers think in terms of equality within the church? Were they addressing the church or were they addressing society, given that society, in the case it was, antagonistic at that time? So they weren't thinking about Christian.
Yeah. Did we get all the questions or did we just
start? If you're okay handling it, we'll just take a few together then.
I'm going to care about being able to copy it. Some battle in my home. I've got my family thinking I have human issues. I was wondering whether Mary would also stand on direct tax violence. What I really wanted to ask was you've chosen to frame this about inequality, but is it about poverty? And that led me thinking, well, couldn't Clement and Basil both do it? Because actually the problem for the rich young ruler is he's poor. He's poor in a spiritual sense because of all these possessions are acting as a hindrance to his spiritual development. And he could be
rich in a worldly sense, but that's also a problem because his neighbours are poor. But I was curious to know why you had chosen to frame this as a discussion about inequality, notwithstanding that we agree with Paul's comments about, you know, there are other bits in the scriptures which do in the New Testament which talk about inequality. But is this not about the dangers of riches and, by implication, the consequences of our immaterial poverty? Which is, I don't think it's quite the same thing, but anyway, you can even disagree.
Chris, I think that's what I'm thinking about. But yeah, it's a good question about, there are battles saying that you should give your wealth away. Does that necessarily mean that the government should be taking its wealth away? And does it also mean, to one step beyond that, voters should be voting for people who will take others' wealth away?
Well, can I ask you two more before you can answer?
Yeah, I can do that.
Great. Yeah, Craig, that's what. Craig, online.
Yeah. Just a quick one, Rob. Do you have any sense in the way that the type of wealth? Because there is different types of wealth. And I think of, you know, if you're holding all your wealth as luxuries and you got like a dozen Ferraris and whatever, versus someone who has a business who they may have a stated wealth, but that is a productive, it's employing people, it's providing services to the community, those types of things. So is the nature of wealth also dealt with in this way with some of these early writers and fathers of the church?
This is the confusion between wealth and income, which actually came up in the UK election campaign.
I've got one myself, which is, you mentioned GDP, like this financial. And I wonder if, okay, it's always been a zero sum, like if you got wealthy, almost is there an implication that someone's got to suffer or not? Because in a place like taking back slaves or AI, someone sort of is always suffering because they're that's really rich. Yeah, so let's Rob deal with those.
Okay, that sounds awesome. I love all these questions. So interesting, yes, I have to think about 2 Corinthians 8 to 9. But Acts 2 to 4, that is a wonderful case, you know, it's dealing within the church. And we know ultimately it is a story that fails, right? We know how that one goes. And so there are other places I can pull from. And part of what I'm doing here is, you know, just trying that flip of, you know, what does different interpretations of the same scripture turn around and do for. So I don't disagree that it's that. Is this about poverty or inequality? So you all confess with me on this if you want. I'll give you why I'm arguing that this more than other places is about also about inequality. It's so interesting for a lot of these patristic writers, how little they actually talked about the poor in it, in the story. And so it is that background to it, that there are those without and there are those with less. And so the focus is on the troubles that the rich are causing there. And that's where I draw on the fact that, you know, this can be something we can talk about inequality on. So just the fact that, hey, the background for it is there are those that are in need, you all have this wealth, and let's talk about what you're doing with it. So that's where I get into the inequality piece. But if you want to press me more on that later, I'd love to have that because I know it's going to come up by other people. And so I get to Chris's comment, does this necessarily mean the government should take wealth? And I'd like to say part of what I'm just trying to do is open the door to sort of what are the different policy options given the different perspectives. And it can actually be manifest in, what comes in church conversations, what we think about as we go to the polls. What we think about as we advocate with our government, as we, and that's part of sort of getting that this gets more complex, obviously, I think, you know, when we say how does this manifest itself, but it doesn't mean that this conversation shouldn't happen. And maybe a starting place for Christians might be, okay, what can we glean from scripture in this conversation? Let's see. Types of wealth matter. I'd have to, Craig, that's a great question. the nature of wealth. I really actually think for some of the patristic writers, that story is going to be yes. You know, I think, you know, if you're certainly looking at the Clements of the world, that, you know, there's a sense of, hey, we can't really help the poor if we don't have anything to help the poor with, right? So you can't take away my stuff and give it to someone else. And, you know, if I can grow my stuff, if I can do stuff with my things, so, you know, so a productive investment, I think, by more of them would be seen as correct and positive. And even, I don't think Basil really goes that direction, but certainly, you know, because he's getting that sort of, you know, hey, there's this excess, you've got excess that you need to put away. So productive assets, I think, again, would be different. You know, even John Chrysostom, who I wanted to talk about so much, was my sort of third one that came into my mind. You know, he sort of, in many ways, is like Basil on this. But there is still that time, you know, hey, you need to give away your wealth because you're a thief otherwise. And then here's what you do with your wealth to help the poor. You know, sort of a sense of keeping it to be able to turn around and help people. So there's a little bit of inconsistency. But I think that's a worthwhile question to delve into, you know, on this. Zero sum is the related question there. Is this a zero sum game? And I think that relates in my mind back to Craig's question too, right? You know, sort of how do you, you know, from our standpoint, this is sort of an absolute equality story. And even, I don't think in the end, Basil and John Chrysostom and some of the others have made a complete equality story. They're telling a story that, you know, hey, you need to be very thoughtful about your resources, and maybe it's okay to keep some to help grow the possibilities for yourself and others. You know, if you are not putting that forefront that you are helping those in need, then you are a killer in that. So, you know, we actually. Still got a few more minutes.
Okay,
you tell me. You're in
control. Oh, you have. Yeah. So, I'm not sure who had that first, but you can go
ahead and come up with it. Okay, come out to more. Yeah, okay. I thought that was great. I thought you were going to say a bit more about how interpretation of scripture was time. Was context dependent, because it sounds like you might come up with a new methodology, which is analyze sermons about the same passage in time.
Yeah.
And actually try and sort of relate, you know, because of course, isn't that the great thing about a sermon? That it, you know, a really good sermon is time context dependent, isn't it? You know, and if the economy is growing, you know, yes, you can get on your bike and get a job. Well, that's what you should, you know, we should be telling people to do that, you know. But if the economy isn't growing and there aren't any jobs, that's a very different message.